All right, welcome everybody. We are doing Parsha Shelach, which is, of course, the episode of The Spies. And the title of this year is Parsha Shelach, the Anatomy of a Breakup from Angel to Devil. You have no idea how I'm going to get to the Parsha from this angle. It's a circuitous thing, but that's it. All right. You guys see the video screen?
Yes.
Yes.
I can see it.
Good. We're going to start the recording. All right. Here we go. So just to cue it up, as they say, there's a series on TV or on cable called The Carey Diaries. Anybody familiar with that? Does anybody know anything about it? Okay, whatever. It's one of these kind of teenagey kind of love things, but whatever. It brings my point across.
Isn't it like the prequel to Sex and the City? Are you teenage Carrie?
Oh,
I think so.
Okay, there you go. I learned something. All right, so here's teenage Carrie and with a love interest, Sebastian. All right, so here you go. But since you guys have a good knowledge of Hollywood, you'll figure out the entire thing. It's only 1 minute and 40 seconds. Here we go.
Stuff with my dad, and just want to see you.
To see me?
To talk to you.
About what?
I don't know. Us?
There's nothing to talk about.
Come on, you must have stuff you want to say to me.
I don't.
Gary, I know that's not true.
I don't want to talk to you because I don't think you want to hear what I have to say.
You're wrong. Whatever you have to say, I deserve
it. Yes, you do.
Okay, so just say it.
Fine. You broke me. You broke my heart. And I hate you because I still love you. And I hate myself even more for it. I'm happy.
I think you should go. I'm sorry.
Expressing my feelings to Sebastian only made me feel worse. But another couple.
All right. Okay. I hope that was clear to everybody. Let's go to our sheet. All right, I got some questions here. Everybody got to see the sheet? You guys see the sheet?
Yeah, I can see it.
Good. All right. Why does Carrie still love her ex even after he broke her heart? What do you guys say?
Because she didn't, she loved him. And like he broke it off before she was ready.
Obviously, but then she should hate him.
Love doesn't just end when you break up with someone.
Why?
I mean, it's an intense emotion that took time to develop. You break up for whatever reason you break up, and eventually that feeling of love will fade away.
Now, she says that not only did he break her heart, but she hates him for that. Why is that not a contradiction?
The hate is tied to the specific action of breaking her heart, not necessarily tied to hating him as a whole person and the whole relationship up until that point.
So what is the what terms are unclear and need to be defined? What term is she using needs to be explored and understood? Sean?
Well, there are different types of love. So like how she's defining love, I think maybe.
Right, that's very unclear. So it's apparently a kind of love that can still exist even though dumped her or broken it off or ended it, and even if it means that she still doesn't like him. You know what I'm saying? There's a paradoxical situation here. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
Which seems not, so how do you explain a love? So Shayna wants to say, she hates the fact that he has certain qualities or that he has hurt her in this kind of way. But there's still love of the love of the relationship or the love of how she felt being in the relationship. Is that what you're saying, Shane? I don't want to put words in your mouth.
We can say that's what I said. I'll agree with it.
Okay.
Right. A lot of times people had the motion of they love being in the relationship just for the sake of the relationship, but they might not like actually love the person. Just love the idea of being in a relationship and how that makes them feel.
Right. So she may love the way she felt. I mean, again, this is a made-up character. These are people who are reading lines, but just we're going with it over here. But she could have loved the fact that she liked being in that state. She liked that She liked that feeling of being in that state of whether it be being cared for, being concerned, etc. How his presence made her feel. Well, simultaneously, she has another emotion of the fact that she feels simultaneously a repulsion to him, that because he hurt her, he broke her heart, whatever the exact terminology. So that's not a now, the question is, why isn't there not a resolution? Why can't she decide if she loves him or hates him? Why can't it be like, all right. Now, here's another thing. Now, is this love for next a common occurrence? What do you guys say?
I think so.
Is love for an ex a common occurrence? Anybody have any ideas here? What do you guys say? You guys got nothing? Mendel! What do you got? Is a love for an ex a common occurrence? Yes or no? Why? And what's your evidence?
Say the question one more time. Is love what kind of occurrence?
Is love for an ex a common occurrence?
Yeah. First of all, as the relationship comes to an end, look, if you're the person doing the breaking up, then no. Apparently, your feelings of love have either been overcome by rationality or some other thing. Love for somebody else, for example. If you're the person who's being broken up with, then your feelings of love, you're probably hit by some degree of surprise. You may not have been expecting what happened. But either way, you still have feelings of love, so you're conflicted. There's some ambiguity there.
Right. So First of all, we have a it's definitely a very common thing because what we actually have a phrase of that in our culture. What? How do we express it?
Was that like the phenomenon of being on the rebound or something?
Well, so a rebound that's close, or you'll say that she or he's not over them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we have that phrase. It's woven into our cultural language that, why didn't it work out with the prison? Oh, because she's still absorbed with the relationship of the previous dude. Or he's still absorbed with the relationship of the previous woman. So he cannot be released from that and therefore develop a healthy relationship with a new person. So this is very common. Very common. That's why there's a linguistic phrase about that. Now, let me ask the more advanced, hard question. Why would her love for X also cause Carrie to hate herself?
Because, it's still, they just broke up. She's still really in love with them.
Why should it mean that she should hate herself? She should hate him.
Because she or he, in this case she, has a realization that which she is deriving love from has rejected her.
So then she should just be angry at him.
But she realizes that the love that she's getting is actually something that she's either projecting or it's not realistic in some way, maybe. I don't know. That's the only thing I can think of. That's the only thing I can come up with. She realizes that she's not being realistic about her feelings. I'm not sure if that's true.
She says she hates herself for it.
What?
What's the anybody have a theory here? David Goldstein, any theories here, David?
Maybe because she feels vulnerable, or the fact that she gave so much of herself. You know, this deep trust when you love someone, you give a piece of yourself, and the fact that she feels that way, maybe she's upset at herself that she can't control it, or
yeah, that
shouldn't be there.
Yeah, Dave, that's a very good thought. In other words, on one hand, the rational part of her realized that this is a crazy situation, and she wished she didn't have these feelings for him, but she can't control that, so she recognized that any engagement with this guy is harmful. Simultaneously, the attraction of being in that state, so maybe secretly she still imagines she's still in that state, whatever, and the fact that she can't control these feelings makes her upset about herself, that she's sort of like in an uncontrolled situation. These are speculations. Now, I'm bringing this little piece of drama up to teach a much more basic principle in psychology, which will help us to unlock the entire Miraglum story. The word Miraglum means the spy. All spies were sent by Moshe to go spy out the land in advance of the invasion. Okay? Now, I'd like somebody to read. All right, let me have Mendel read. The map is not the territory. Let's read this out.
The map is not the territory by Bob Hoffmeyer. A beam of white light goes out and is received by three people. Through the filter of one, it appears red, for another blue, and for the third, it is dull gray. This is not unlike what happens as we take in our experiences of life. Each new experience we have is filtered through an internal map of reality that is already there. It is what is stored on our map that determines our experience of what happens in life. And as we shall see, it is our map that enables or limits us as we go forward in life. It is the content of their individual maps that makes something so incredibly easy for one person and so seemingly impossible for another.
Okay. So what is, this is a nice idea. What's in between the map and the territory? What does that mean? What's the difference between a map and a territory? And he applies that principle to our perceptions.
A map is just one person's drawing of a territory, of an area, of a land, of a place. But how each individual person sees that place, or in this case, it sounds like what goes through life, is unique to that person. And so everyone's map of the same place may not be the same.
Correct. What idea does it bring about our understanding of reality? What challenge about reality does this really bring to bear or expose us?
Our own perceptions distort reality.
Exactly. In other words, what reality is not really so simple to really absolutely capture. But you can, for example, we have all the time. In other words, you go to a party and you can ask three people, was it a good party or a bad party? Was it a fun party or not a fun party, right? And you very well may get a lot of different answers. So there's the territory, there's the actual reality of the party, and the map is the people's perception of the situation, which is not the same thing. Now this is question number four. What would you call the part of Carrie, that's the girl, that judges whether her map of Sebastian is real or not? What do you call that? What part of Carrie judges whether her map of Sebastian is real or not?
The perception.
The perception is just the raw data coming into your mental screen. How do you know that perception? By what element or what part of you determines if that perception or that map is an accurate one?
Emotions?
That's how she judges her map is real or not?
Culmination of life experiences.
Well, how do you know to figure out which experience or which map is a better map? That you're dealing with the version 1, 2, or 3, which one is the better version? Mendel?
Faith, intuition.
Your intuition? Well, your intuition is part of your, it's really part of your mind. In other words, your mind, your tselem Elohim, your divine, the divine image of God, that aspect is what determines, how allows you to sift through what perception or what map of reality is better. Now, oftentimes it's not so simple. You know what I'm saying? So Carrie, a part of her recognized that her map of, one map is telling her that what? Sebastian is an amazing guy. And in a certain sense, being with Sebastian, what? Completes her, right? Simultaneously, she has another map that says being with, Sebastian is a bum. Being with Sebastian is a source of pain. Stay away from Sebastian. So she's sifting through these different maps of the territory. There is out there a true perception, a true assessment of Sebastian, but it's not so simple because she's being confused by these various maps or perceptions of Sebastian. Now, it's not so simple. Now, let's get into the Parsha, and we will apply this principle because it's very, all right. Let's have somebody read. All right, Shana, read, Bavakasha.
Okay. Parsha's See what kind of, or Parshat Shalach, the spy's mission. See what kind of land it is. Are the people who live there strong or weak? We were many. Is the inhabited area good or bad? Are the cities where they live open or fortified? Is the soil rich or weak? Does the land have trees or not? Make a special effort to bring back some of the land's fruits. It was the season when the first grapes began to ripen.
Okay, so basically, this is Moshe's instruction to the 12 spies. Now, the spies, by the way, I didn't put that part of the bar. These guys are not just, who were they? This is some basic Parsha background information.
The leaders.
They were 12 leaders. They were, each one was a tribal leader, a nasi, a prince. All right, so they go and they come back, and now they come back with a report. Go ahead, Shana.
The spies report. They gave the following report. We came to the land where you sent us, and it is indeed flowing with milk and honey, as you can see from its fruit. However, the people living in the land are aggressive, and the cities are large and well fortified. We also saw the giants' descendants there. Amalek lives in the Negev area. The Hittites, Jebusites, and Amorites live in the hills, and the Canaanites live near the sea and on the banks of the Jordan. Caleb tried to quiet the people for Moses. We must go forth and occupy the land, he said. We can do it. We cannot go forward against those people, replied the men who had gone with him. They are too strong for us. They began to speak badly about the land that they had explored. They told the Israelites, the land that we crossed to explore is a land that consumes its inhabitants. All the men we saw there were huge. While we were there, we saw the Titans. They were sons of the giant who descended from the original Titans. We felt like tiny grasshoppers. That's all that we were in their eyes.
Good.
Rabbi, who were the Titans?
So some very large people, you know, Anakim are like giants. All right. They saw a bunch of large people. We'll get to that. We'll get to that in a moment.
Did they mean like actual people or like statues that they saw?
No, they're very people who are a lot taller than them. You know, it's like when a little Jew goes up to a Scandinavian guy who's like 6'7", you know, 6'6". An average Jew is like 5'7", you know what I'm saying? Tiny right, Jew yeah. Next to a large Scandinavian. These guys are giants. But go on. I don't think they were 50 feet tall. Okay, it's not like it's not that. Yeah.
The entire community raised a hubbub and began to shout. That night, the people wept. All the Israelites complained to Moses and Aaron. The entire community was saying, we wish we had died in Egypt. We should have died in the desert. Why is God bringing us to this land to die by the sword? Our wives and children will be captives. It would be best to go back to Egypt. The people started saying to one another, let's appoint a new leader and go back to Egypt.
Right, so that's a complete meltdown, a complete repudiation of Moshe's leadership, a complete disaster. All right, let's keep on going.
Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before the whole assembled Israelite community. Among the men who had explored the land, Joshua son of Nun and Caleb son of Jephunneh tore their clothes in grief. They said to the whole Israelite community, the land through which we passed in our explorations is a very, very good land. If God is satisfied with us and brings us to this land, he can give it to us, a land flowing with milk and honey. But don't rebel against God. Don't be afraid of the people in the land. They have lost their protection and shall be our prey. God is with us, so don't be afraid. The whole community was threatening to stone them to death when God's glory suddenly appeared at the communion tent before all the Israelites.
Okay, so basically, you had the you had 12 spies. Who were the two spies that were advocating to go ahead with the invasion?
Joshua and Caleb,
or Yoshua and Kaleb. Okay, great. And they're saying it's a great. So there's a very simple question here. How can two people or two group of people have completely opposite perceptions? Now they both agreed that what do they both agree upon? What do they both agree upon?
That the current inhabitants are like strong people.
They agree about that. What else do they agree upon?
the land itself and not the people in it.
What do they agree about the land?
About it flowing with fruit and honey.
Right. What does that phrase mean, flowing of milk and honey? What does it mean for a land to flow with milk and honey? What does that phrase even mean? Where does it come from?
Well, I think the honey pertains to date honey.
So what does that mean? If it's flowing with milk and honey, or the honey part, what does that mean?
Well, for the honey part, it means that there's an abundance of date trees. So the land is fertile.
There's so much dates, it's just literally oozing off the trees. Okay, what does it mean it's flowing with milk? What does that mean?
Are they referring to livestock?
Okay, good. What do you mean? What specific? What kind of livestock?
That there's much, you know, source of milk and goats or sheep or cow.
Exactly. They have so much livestock that are producing so much milk that there's an abundance of milk. It's as if the entire place, like down the street, is like a whole wave full of milk. Or it's a way of expressing the profound fertility and robustness and richness of the environment. Okay, it's a land flowing with milk and honey. That's the way of saying that. Basically, it's a super fertile and productive land. Now, then. So they both agree. Now, where is the disagreement in? There are two elements where they disagree upon.
Well, whether they could conquer the land?
Yeah.
Right. Can we? In other words, these people are so huge, we can't do it. We can't get these guys. So, and Caleb and Yoshua says, no, they've lost their protection. We're our prey. God's with us. We'll take them down. No problem. And they say, no, we can't do it. What else did the other 10 spies say about the, they added another aspect, which seems to be contradictory.
Well, even though both said that the land flows with milk and honey, the first group talked bad about the actual land. So they kind of...
What do they say about the land?
We said the land consumes its inhabitants.
The land consumes its inhabitants. So the question is, well, what the heck does that mean? So we're going to go to some aphorism here, some commentators. Now, let's check out Rashi and the Sforno. One Rashi and two Sfornos. All right, so let's have who's going to read? Who's going to read? Who has not read? Sean, you have read. Go ahead.
For they are stronger. They said this. If this were at all possible, i.e., if one may be permitted to say so of God, with reference to the omnipresent, stronger than he, they thus uttered blasphemy.
Right. So they said they're stronger than me. They're stronger than us. When they said they're too strong for us, Menu could also refer to or too strong for him. In other words, they were intimated, really, what? They were so afraid, they felt that they could, that even God could not even get them. Okay? Mm-hmm. That's Rashi number one.
Okay, then the Sforno. It is a land that eats in its inhabitants. So even though the people living there are strong, this is not a compliment to the land. Rather, it means that it is only due to their exceptionally hardy constitution if they were able to survive in that land. Ordinary people would die there because the climate is so hard to take.
All right, so basically their assessment is by saying that the land eats in the hand, in other words, Why are all these tall people around? Because all the normal people, like us, couldn't last. So they're giving their interpretation why only the tall people can do it, but not the regular people. And now this is interesting. The Pasuk says, we felt like tiny grasshoppers. That's all we were in their eyes, Rashi.
So the Sephorno, like grasshoppers, were even less significant. They did not bother to harm us, as they did not think we represented a threat to them.
Okay, so the basic question is, how is it possible that they could have two different perceptions of the same place? Any ideas?
Two different perspectives about what they were looking at.
Okay, go ahead.
Kalev and Yehoshua had the perspective, had a different perspective. The 10 other Meraglim had a perspective of will this fit into some previous conception I have about, you know, my ability to take over the land or something. Will I feel powerful enough to dominate this land? Whereas Yehoshua and Kalev seem to have a perspective of something different than that.
Okay. Anybody want to add to that?
Well, maybe the differences in their actual perceptions relates to their, like, strengthen their belief in Hashem. So then the lack of belief caused the 10 to have such a negative perception and not have enough kavana to believe that you got into Israel and be able to defeat the inhabitants and things like that, versus having that strong enough belief that Hashem is guiding us through out of Mithraim, through the desert, and, you know, believe in the whole, like, clouds of glory and all that.
I mean, didn't they see the miracles in Egypt? What's happening here? And these are not 10 regular people. They're 10 great men. Now I'm gonna go ahead, Shana.
Joshua was a warrior, though. Wasn't he the one in charge of the armies?
He was asked by Moshe to lead the army into battle to fight against true.
Right, so his perception of, he's seeing this through basically a soldier's eyes, that yes, we can conquer them. We're strong enough. We have the army. We have the manpower. I don't know if the other 10 have that same background that he has.
Why don't they trust him?
Numbers?
Interesting. I didn't quote the pause, but they made this report, by the way. One of the poker tells, they gave the following report. What should they have done if they felt this level of anxiety? Where should they have gone?
Moshe directly.
Shouldn't they have gone straight back to Moshe?
They should have gone to Moshe, correct. But where did they give this report?
In front of everybody.
That's
like when you reprimand somebody or something, like even in the classroom as a teacher, you don't want to like be like to the kid, you're not going to speak because you haven't handed in 25 assignments. Right.
So what can you deduce by the fact that they wanted to do in front of everybody?
They want to make a scene.
They want to make a point. They want to really stoke sort of like a revolution already here.
Now, they wanted to force his hand.
They wanted to force his hand, exactly. Now, here's a wild thing from the Mishnah. All right, Scott, read it out.
The Rashi?
No, it says the Mishnah here. There's one over here.
The Mishnah. The spies have no share in the world to come. As it says, even those men that bring up an evil report of the land died by the plague before the Lord, died in this world, in the plague, in the world to come.
Okay, so the Mishnah has a tradition here that these 10 men, not did they get killed by a plague, that what?
But they died in the world to come.
They have no part of the world to come. So that's like the worst punishment. And I ask you a simple question. What, I mean, okay, so let's see. They got afraid, they got scared, and then they scared everybody else. Why should they lose their portion to the world to come? That's pretty harsh.
Because they're inciting like a revolution, like they're I don't know. It's right, a pretty harsh offense.
They're doing it with
Sorry, one at a time. All right, Sean, and then Amanda, and then Scott.
Well, I was just going to say that I think the severity of their punishment is greater because they did it in front of like the entire nation. It was like a public display.
Okay,
like
so that's so. But notice it doesn't say that even those men who brought up an evil report of the land. It seems to be that it's the Dibarah, the evil report, or what they call the Lashon Hara against the land. They're not focusing. It's not because they did it publicly. It's the content of what they said, which they did publicly, right? The pasuk doesn't talk about their punishment is not so much they did it publicly, which of course is bad.
Mm-hmm. It's also because the land of Israel has a holy, has a holiness to it. So it's not like you're talking bad about Nebraska or like the middle of Oklahoma. There's holiness to the land of Israel. So, yeah.
So what's it like? Is the land a being that it got offended? Like it got hurt its feelings? Like
no, but then there's this idea of right that like in Israel, like everything is different. Like. In regards to rain and Lashon Hara and davening.
All right, so we have to understand. But what is that different? Is it like a magic place?
It's not magic. It's just because of the land that was promised to our forefathers.
Ah! In other words, the significance is this is the land which is the promise of the entire covenant. God promised Avram and then Yitzchak and then Yaakov that the Jewish people would inherit this land. By them making a public pronouncement that this land is inherently cursed, that the land that eats its inhabitants, or to put it in the language of saying, they wanted to insist that their map was the territory. Caleb was saying, no, 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 no. Your map is not the territory. It is completely distorted. You're no different than Carrie, who still thinks God loves you. It's not true. And they're trying to share with the Jewish people that the map, that this is a beautiful land. Yes, the people are strong, but we have God behind us, and we're going to be successful. But the spies tapped into by insisting that their map of the territory was accurate is because why were they so successful? Because all these people, former slaves who had only been a slave basically a year before, were petrified about going and doing a land invasion against the land of Canaan with 31 kings and their armies. Okay? So they wanted to believe that this land is what? Impenetrable, no invasion could be successful against them. It's like, you know, it's like getting into Fort Knox. It cannot be done. And they told the people what they wanted to hear. Now, why did they lose their portion of the world to come? Because basically they blocked the entire Jewish people from basically fulfilling the covenant of Abraham, Isaac, and Yaakov. Right now, the Jews are just steps away from initiating basically the sort of the Messianic era where Moshe would be the leader and the Jewish people would invade the land. They would dispossess the enemies from the land and they would live in the land of Israel, ultimately settling the land, building the temple, and everything would have been great. But no, they insisted that their map, this is an impossible area, their map was the territory, ruined everything. And that's a profound sin because it's indicting the land that Hashem promised the Avos, which has, it's intrinsically the way for the Jewish people for many generations, for generations to come, to actually become a truly treasured, special, holy people. And they basically blocked that shot. So therefore, they get the worst punishment. Now, let's go on. It's actually terms that they actually spoke Lashon Hara about the land. Now, let's take a little bit of Rambam about Lashon Hara. Very interesting here. All right, let me have Mendel read.
Rambam, Laws of Character Traits, Chapter 7, Halacha 3. Our sages said there are three sins for which retribution is exacted from a person in this world, and for which he is nonetheless denied a portion in the world to come. Idol worship, forbidden sexual relations, and murder. Lashon Hara is equivalent to all of them.
All right, stop right there. All right, so the Rambam, actually, the Chazal that the Rambam quotes is that there are three sins where you get punished in this world and the next. Those are the three big ones: idolatry, murder, and forbidden sexual relations. Okay, and it says Lashon Hara Kineged Kulam. Not, I mean it's exactly the same, but there's an element there. It has an element of the severity of that. Okay, go on.
Lashon Hara is equivalent to all of them. Our sages also said, anyone who speaks Lashon Hara is like one who denies God, as implied by Psalms chapter 12, verse 5. Those who said, with our tongues we will prevail. Our lips are our own. Who is Lord over us?
Okay. This, by the way, that verse from Psalms is actually the key to understand this very rather extreme statements of the rabbis. That anyone who speaks Lashon Hara, now Lashon Hara is communicating negative information, which is true, okay, is like one who denies God. Now, I ask you a question. A guy goes over and says, you know, I think Bob, you know, Bob is not, you know, says to a group of people, Bob is not trustworthy because he did X, Y, Z, okay? Carrie.
But you can tell the truth if it's for shidduch and it's for business. And my mom also has a theory that it's not Lashon Hara if you talk to your mother, but I'm just kidding. It's not serious.
Okay, that's not Lashon Hara because it's for a purpose, but we're talking, now what is it, what's the phrase here? It says, the people say, who is, it's like one who denies God. It says, those who said, with our tongues we will prevail, our lips are our own. Who is Lord over us? The verse here from Psalm, from Tehillim and from Psalms, it's talking about a mentality. What is that mentality? This is very critical.
That you don't have to answer to anybody. That's that mentality. That you can say what you want to say because at the end of the day that you, because it says, right? I mean, I'm driving, but just from what I'm hearing, it says that our tongues over, our lips over a veil, right? So it's this idea that, like, I don't know. That's my guess.
Okay, good start. Keep on going. Shana, you want to add?
I was going to say, it makes them sound like they know better than God.
Right, and what are they saying? When they will say negative speech, and they don't have to be restricted in any old way whatsoever. What are they fundamentally saying?
That they are the judges. They're the ones who are allowed to judge the worth of a person.
Correct. My assessment of the reality, or using the same term, my map is the territory. And if I think Bob is not trustworthy, he is not trustworthy. And if I think that this person is ugly, she is ugly. And if this person I think is a thief, they are a thief. You know what I'm saying? Now, how do you know that our maps about people are very inexact? What basic fact about any of our assessment about people renders our maps a very gross approximation? This is a very important idea to know about. Why is our approximation about people very limited? And there's a number of reasons.
I was actually just talking about this with a student today. It's because perception, like, it's your perception. It's not necessarily reality. And perception.
Why is your perception accurate?
Because we have feelings and we have emotions and we have all different factors that play into it. So it's not the hard facts. Like, there's three sides to every story. There's his side, your side, and the truth.
Right. So, but let's unpack why our perception or our side of the story is not necessarily reality. Fact number one, we spend a very, very small percentage of time with people. Okay. So therefore, just pure, even if I'm assuming that our read of the situation is accurate, right? We're getting a very slender piece of information. Let me give you something that happened to me today. I was speaking to somebody within the organization, and I was asking them who would be good to solve a particular marketing issue or a branding issue, okay? All right? The person said, he was talking about this such person, and the person said that this person who appears like, you know, very little bit negative, a little bit difficult, they shared that they lost their child to an opioid, a heroin overdose this past summer. So automatically, once I got that information, my perception of the person completely changed. You know what I'm saying? Instead of being like, what's the deal with this dude or girl, right? Like, what's up with that person? And how come they're a little bit, you know, challenging or difficult or to deal with? My perception was completely turned around. Like, how is this person even able to do their job at all? You know what I'm saying?
Like, to be able to function.
Right. It's like shocking. And this is a person that has, you know, and it was an adult child, you know what I mean? Their eldest child, you know, it's a tragedy of epic proportions, right? The opioid, epidemic is reaching every part of the Jewish community and every part of the American community. We're not spared. So, you know what I'm saying? So that one fact, you know what I'm saying? Well, I may have internally categorized them one way, one fact, boom. My attitude, my sense of compassion to that person, you know, how I relate to that person completely changed. You know what I'm saying? So these people are saying, our love, you know, those who said, with our tongues we will prevail, our lips are our own. Who is Lord over us? The person who is insisting that their map is the territory, that my story is the story, it's a denial of God, because you're saying that you're omniscient. No, we have very little information. Even when we see things, we said before, like, some people see it blue, some people see it white, some people say dull gray. Even our perception of the same thing is going to be subject to distortion and slight change, okay? So we can't say negative information about somebody because we don't know. We're not in a position to really do that. That's really God's providence. So we have to be, that's why Lashon Hara is bad, because it predicates an arrogance. Like, I know reality. You know what I'm saying? Now, you're allowed to, if it's a You're allowed to bring your working thesis about somebody if it's for an objective purpose, such as to prevent somebody getting into a bad relationship, whether it be romantic or in a business relationship. But in general, just for sport, just to vent our feelings, we're not allowed to do that. These people, with their lashon hara about the land, saying it's a land that consumes inhabitants, well, that's their editorial, that they made that whole thing up. You know what I'm saying? That was their own speculation. But they were so confident and they were so afraid and they were so insistent to sort of capsize the Jewish people that they didn't go into Moshe's tent to discuss this. They made a whole public proclamation that this is a land that Eretz Ochelet et Yosheveha, a land that consumes its inhabitants. They said their perception, their map is the territory. And by doing so, changed the course of Jewish history for all time. Because they could have had a glorious moment where Moshe would have led the Jewish people successfully, dispossessing the very kings, and Moshe would have become the king there. They would have built the temple, and it would have been basically the Messianic era right out of the bat. But unfortunately, they did not, and Yeshua took over. He was not able to, only make a very limited invasion in a limited space, and it took only till King David, hundreds of years later, 400 or 500 years later, to be able to get a full, so that was a 500-year mistake, and then 400-year mistake, and then his son had to do it, and then it fell back, then it had more problems. That declaring negative an indictment of the land and by extension the promise that God made to the Avot was a endowment. So really, this is a very good example of how in our own lives how we judge people, to know that our map and the territory are very different. And yes, we have to make judgment with the limited information, but we have to know that always it's tentative. And the person I was talking with said a very nice line. I felt it was worth sharing with you guys. Is you walk in an office situation, right? Or in school, or you're at MJE, wherever you are, and you do not know what burdens people are carrying around. You don't know what burdens people are walking around with. You know what I'm saying? We all don't know what's in people's lives. They don't necessarily share with everybody. And to be charitable and to be warm, to be embracing, to be sensitive is so important. And simultaneously, to avoid negative speech, which is an arrogance fundamentally, because I'm saying, I know. Well, no, your perception might capture a small, slender section of reality, but to say definitively, no, wrong. And that was a failure of the 10 Meraglim, and they touched the Jewish people's insecurities in a very powerful and potent way, which resulted in what? Which resulted in the entire Jewish people getting crazy, hysterical, and saying, we cannot do this, we got to get a new leader, we got to go back to Egypt, they're done. And basically, they were going to basically frustrate the entire exodus from Egypt. They want to go back to Egypt. And that was a moment, and they, of course, as you know, at the end of the Parsha, that the 10 spies get killed, the rest of that generation, anybody who was 20 years and older, had to walk aimless, walk in the desert for 40 years, a total of 40 years, until they died, and they were not allowed to go into the land, and only their children would go into the land. So it's a very sad tale. And in fact, that night, does anybody know, this is an extra credit for hard question, does anybody know, according to the rabbis, was the night that they cried?
Oh, I know.
Tisha B'Av?
Tisha B'Av is correct.
Yeah.
Yes. So the Chazal.
There's so many things that happen on Tisha B'Av. There's a lot of things that happen on Tisha B'Av.
Right. It's one of the five things. Now, so the Chazal say, the rabbis say, that you cried for nothing on this night. In other words, you're crying that you're not, you're going to be so unsuccessful. Hashem says, I'm going to give you something to cry about on this day. And that's when the two temples were destroyed on this day. So, interesting thing. There's a lot of stuff here, but I just want to give you guys a little flavor, a little taste of the Parsha. It's a very robust Parsha. There's a lot of stuff. It's something worthy of reading carefully and analyzing it, but just to give you a sort of a rubric and to know that the example is a very important principle in psychology. The map is not the territory. And you see that the Meraglim's map was a completely distortion of the territory, and they took the Jewish people down with them. So it was an example of a complete failure of leadership. Any questions? I guess I answered them all. All right, guys, have a great night. I'll see many of you tomorrow.